Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back on this Friday. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. And, of course, they have wine coolers, lots of water, soft drinks, plenty of soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. You need to stock up for the weekend. It's going to be a big, big weekend. Okay? Good just to hang in there and just watch games and enjoy everything you picked up at Brewers Outlet. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar led by my two personal favorites, the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. All right. Before we get to Neil Kulong, our play-by-play call today, it's the NBA preseason, but Victor Wembanyama, the first overall pick, keeps flashing great plays like this one.
Oh, I think good hands there. I think Samuel's got a fingertip on that. Poked it away, and then the pass ahead to Whitmore, and Holiday missed the biggest dude on the floor. And then he comes back, tried to block the shot from Bassey and fouled him.
If I'm not mistaken, did Wembanyama just nutmeg Reggie Bullock? Oh, hold on. Did the big fella...
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Shooting two?
Yeah, right through the five hole there.
And if you're wondering what nutmeg means, it means he dribbled it between the legs of the defender. Put it, boom, they got it on and was able to get the ball on the other side. It actually was pretty clever. Look, the Spurs won't make the playoffs. He'll be the rookie of the year by default. He'll be in the All-Star game by default, the whole thing. They'll try and make him into the biggest thing since sliced bread. I got it. All right, so here we go. And he is a very talented player for a guy that size. Very talented. He made a behind-the-back pass on a save into the corner, but the typical, like all these plays, what happened on all these plays? Okay, the Spurs did miss the shot on the play. The one he went behind the back and got to the corner said a phenomenal play. The Spurs missed the shot. It's like, see, that's the problem he's going to have. He doesn't have enough good players around him. All right, let's turn our attention to Neil Kulong, talk about the NFL. Sir, always a pleasure.
It's great to be here. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
So the Steelers, a mystifying team, went through at least a bye, so we're not so mystified. But we saw a weekend of football where we saw low scoring and teams expected to win that didn't. What were your thoughts watching it?
I felt overall on the week that it was kind of regression to the mean. The one game that intrigued me the most was San Francisco and Cleveland. Yes. I think a lot of people expected San Francisco to just roll over Cleveland. But really what we see in the Browns is what I thought was going to end up happening when Jim Schwartz came in there. That's a high-level defensive team. They're really good. Miles Garrett, obviously, is a fantastic player. But you watch them, their entire unit. They play a lot of guys. They go really deep into packages. There's a lot of things they can do, and they're really good at all of it. An amazing job by Schwartz with just one training camp and 6 weeks into the season to largely paralyze an offense that's, you know, just as versatile as Cleveland's defense is. And I think the message overall for the league is, you know, that this is not going to be a runaway for anybody. You know, I think we kind of thought that going into it, or at the very least, we don't know. In the first half of the season, it still kind of seems to be trial and error for most teams. It's not suggesting they don't play hard or anything, but they don't get to that Super Bowl form for a while. You know, you're really not seeing teams really running deep into to seasons undefeated anymore. And Cleveland, for them to have done that with P.J. Walker playing pretty miserably, I mean, he did not have a very good game at all. It's a testament to how good of a defensive team they are. And San Francisco's no joke in three phases either. And Cleveland did enough to be able to take them out. A very impressive win.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. It's not just P.J. Walker, but Zach Wilson led the Jets in some way or shape or form over the Philadelphia Eagles. I want to ask you about Hurts for a moment. I felt Hurts last year, Neil, 90% of the time, I say played great. I mean, every game, 90% of the time, which I think is phenomenal to say that about any player. This year, I don't even think he's close to that. I've got him in the very good category to this point. Why do you think are you saying the same thing? And if so, why?
I think with Hurts, from what I'm seeing of him, it's not the end result, the aggregate result is what we're seeing. It's not surprising when you watch his games play to play. To me, the difference between last year and this year, it really is only a couple plays, it feels like. You know, and they're not getting Devontae Smith going downfield as well as they did. A.J. Brown, being who he is, he's going to make the plays that he makes. But they had two guys doing that last year, and they got a lot more out of their tight end play as well. And I think Philadelphia is not too far off, but you're seeing a team that required a high level of precision to do the things that they do well. It took a lot of coordination to be able to do that. To throw a new coaching staff in there, you can see perhaps why the struggles are happening the way that they are. But Jalen Hurts was not a wide-open, end-to-end kind of player, you know, to mix my sports metaphors. It's more, not to say that he is not good, but they had phenomenal offensive coaching on that team last year. I think that is kind of the piece that's missing. Not series to series, but just a few plays throughout the game are really the difference. In my opinion, anyway, they were able to get him on the edge with room to operate. He had the ability to run a little bit more or hit something deep, and he did a great job deciding which one of those to do. He didn't make mistakes with the ball the way he did against the Jets. Now, the Jets aren't a sleeper defense either. Let's give them some credit. But they beat him up pretty good. He fought hard. He put up a good effort, which suggests to me he is very close to being the type of player that he is. But just, you know, maybe that's really it. The difference between, you know, the high end guys and the mid guys are just a couple plays. I think we're seeing that on, you know, as a trend throughout the NFL right now. And Hurts is perhaps the best example of that. He's a better player, but I think they were able to put him in better positions last season. And through six games, let's, you know, keep in mind they're not failing. I mean, they're a 5-1 team. Right. But he has looked better. The offense has played better, and that, you know, is something they're going to need to get going in a hurry if they want to be back where they were.
It was also a weekend where, for the most part, scoring was down. Now, we all know defensive coordinators aren't out there playing golf in the offseason every single day, getting the handicap down to 5. They're looking at tape of everybody so they can be ready for whatever they think the trend is at the moment. Why do you think that we're seeing scores down, especially with some of the talent we see on offense?
If we put it at the 10,000-foot level, teams are really just playing a lot more cover two. There are situations in which they'll go, you know, cover zero. They'll be a lot more aggressive, but you're not seeing kind of an all or nothing type of defense that ended up surrendering a lot of big plays. When you play back off of Patrick Mahomes, when he doesn't have the ability to escape horizontally, buy himself some time and make some ridiculous, you know, zero window throw 80 yards down the field, Your scoring is going to come down to what's probably a little bit more reasonable. You know, to say it's down compared to where it was, which was at historical highs. I think that it's regressing back to the mean because teams are really intent on not allowing the big plays deep down the field. You're seeing safeties getting drafted higher than they were, perhaps not top five, but good amount of them are going in the first round, and teams are committed to having two legit safeties playing deeper. Now, they'll move them around. You want to cover your slot, but that as well. You're getting more versatile linebackers that can help out with the slot. You're keeping more cornerbacks. There are more game-ready cornerbacks coming into the NFL. The money there is going up a little bit. I think with that in mind, they're able to keep two safeties back a lot more often to really try to take away those big plays. And it's teams, in turn, are throwing shorter, possessing the ball more, and playing more ball control, waiting for their opportunities to open up in order to score. Through 6 weeks, I mean, that's a lot that you'd have to flesh out. But it just feels like that watching it, because at the same time, you've seen a lot of sacks too. You know, defense, I think, is catching up compared to where it was. But schematically, there's a big emphasis on rolling coverage over the top and not allowing stuff outside the numbers.
Yep, Miami's the one that bucks this trend with what they've done to this point. What makes Mike McDaniel's offense, with Tua running it, and he made sure that when I talked to him in the spring, he emphasized that part. What makes that a difference?
I hate to be cliche and obvious, but speed. Those guys can move. They're fast. Everybody's fast in the NFL. You know, that can't be the difference between a team averaging 31 a game and one averaging 16. You know, there's got to be more to it than that. Mike McDaniel is a genius. The way that he sets up all of his players on the field, he's really committed to using everybody actively on every play. And I think that in turn, that in concert with the fact that you have some great run after catch receivers, that sets them up for big plays. And on top of that, they're a very effective running team. They've got great balance overall. And we've seen them put it together to significant results through this point in the season. A team that I don't know if there's a defense in the NFL that's really going to stop them, short of, you know, getting a second half stand maybe at some point. But you got to almost think they're kind of the favorites just with what they can do offensively. There are, as you mentioned, that they're the ones that are bucking the trend. Yeah. And a lot of it is, in my opinion, just this total offensive philosophy. They use everybody. They have great athleticism. There are great players on that team, and a quarterback that knows where to go with the ball. To me, he looks a lot more confident. He's not missing stuff nearly as often as he had earlier in his career. And he's, you know, really just kind of keeping it simple. There's a great player here who's going to be here. I'm going to get him the ball there, and he's going to go a long way. They've eaten off that several times this year. I think we'll see that continue.
All right, and that's the interesting part. I think they will continue with it because I think they've got something that is difficult to stop right now. We just went through another Chargers game where they lost. And, of course, the topic of analytics comes up. Do we have to do a better job of staying away from the simple answer of analytics and understanding that a coach knows his personnel and he knows what the weaknesses are of his personnel, thus that he is more inclined maybe to go for it on fourth down because he knows he has weaknesses? And I'm thinking about Washington, Oregon, for example. You know, Dan Lanning got criticized, especially at the end of the game. I think he knew against Penix he had some holes back there, and this was his best shot to win, and he got criticized for it because he didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to criticize when it fails. And people oftentimes want to take the ultimate fourth down decision as a very binary black and white thing. And yes, the decision go or not go is there. But from there, do you have any idea how much time, preparation, planning goes into what you're going to call
right
on fourth down?
Yeah.
Give me numbers all you want. And the data scientists are going to tell you that. These numbers represent frequency over the course of every team over the course of the season. They do not represent anything specific in that moment. You have to take into account, among many things, weather, injuries, your specific matchups, but perhaps most importantly, tendency. What have you run before? I remember talking with you back in the day when Mike Tomlin went 0-for-5 against the Cowboys on two-point conversion.
Right.
You know what they were prior to that? Something like 75-80%.
Right.
Up to that point, the trend is they're going to hit 4 out of 5. Okay, well, they missed on all of them because that doesn't matter. It's about who you have matched up. It's about who you're going against and what can you do with what you have against them. I've said this a lot. My decision, this is just me, to go for 2 points on a play is going to be far less frequent if Kenny Pickett is my quarterback. Whereas if Lamar Jackson is my quarterback, I'm going to go for 2 a lot more often. Right. That has nothing to do with anything else except for the fact that I've got a great dual threat weapon in a short space. I'm going to build up around that player. When we get into analytics, and everybody's going to get into this, and perhaps, you know, Brandon Staley becomes the scapegoat of the whole thing, it's not just simple, you know, we're going to get this 60% of the time over the course of the season, because over the course of the season does not matter. It's not baseball. You don't play it like that. When you have 17 games, you have to play the situation. We know that because what do they do in baseball? When they face a specific situation, they're not going with what would work for them with a plan over 162 games. They got to play in a 7-game series, so they're playing it based on the situation. My point in that is, when you lock into just the statistics of it, you're really defeating the purpose of what the analytics are there to tell you anyway. It's to give you a sense of what is going to happen, so you can plan out everything else around it. Just because this number is where it is not the reason to go for it. It suggests if we do this now and we miss, we have to go for it next time. Do we have a good chance of making both of these? The numbers say this. You know, it's a decision-making tool. It's not the ultimate factor, and it's not designed to be that. People right, just right. want the simple answer of something, and it doesn't really work that way.
Steelers go to SoFi, play the Rams. Coming up on Sunday, your thoughts on the matchup?
I was telling people earlier, I'm tired of predicting Steelers games.
I know. It's impossible.
Everything I pick is wrong. I thought Broderick Jones was going to be terrible against Baltimore. Literally the opposite of that. What I see on paper and film up to this point, the Rams have a very complicated scheme for the Steelers, the way that they play defense. I like the Rams throwing the ball in this game. They run crossers, slants, those types of things that tend to be effective against the Steelers defense, but not playing as much man as they did, probably due to the fact that they don't have, well, they have one good man cover corner who doesn't play all that much for some reason. The other ones are not going to be able to keep up with the Rams receivers, Cooper Kupp in particular, from the slot. If they play him in man, they're in trouble. So I would imagine they're going to run a lot of combos, high-low types of stuff that McVay loves to do. McVay loves this kind of a matchup. I would expect them to have a pretty solid offensive game. Can the Steelers keep up with, well, anybody in the league offensively? It's not the way that I see it, but we've seen them do some crazy things coming off of a bye as well. So, you know, maybe this is kind of a get-right game for them. It's not a strong, talent-wise Rams team. But after saying all of that, I look at Aaron Donald versus Mason Cole, and I think that it's going to be a long game for the Steelers offense. So for me, I think it's tough to go cross-country to win against just about anybody. And I think the Rams really have the matchup advantage in this. I don't think top to bottom they're a better team per se, but the Steelers just have weaknesses where the Rams have strengths, and it's a matchup game. Sometimes it just comes down to that.
My friend, always a pleasure making the show better like you always do.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
The great Neil Coulon from SI.com. Great to have him on the show as always, talking about the NFL. Eagles, of course, we'll have the showdown Sunday night with the Dolphins. That should be interesting. The way that Dolphin offense is played against the Steeler, against an Eagle defense, that actually is played, I think, pretty well, really well. And how much pressure can the Eagles get on Tua? That will be a big part of this game.
That'll be fun Sunday night. All right. The business of sports is always churning along. Roger Goodell, as we told you earlier in the week, ended up getting a contract extension through the spring of 2027. So we'll talk with Tony Knopp about that and more. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sudbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend right now. Make that trip over. Put on WKOK 1070 and just listen on the way over here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none, at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And off we go to the heart of Texas and bring in Tony Knopp. Sir, welcome.
Hello, hello. From Texas, yeah. Enjoyed the Rangers last night. Looking forward to Rangers and Astros. That's going to be a rivalry.
That will be a rivalry series that'll be fun to watch. Two very talented teams.
Tony and I, the Twins, though.
And Tony and I, by the way, are already making Big Ten football and basketball plans.
So. Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be so much fun. It's so much more exciting to go to Happy Valley than to Corvallis.
Oh.
Nothing against Oregon State, but I'm glad we're not going back to Corvallis or Pullman.
Yeah, exactly. Now, and we say that with all due respect to two fine institutions and communities.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so we are at a point now. We've talked about TV contracts extensively. You're sitting there in an advisory role. You understand how tickets operate, what interest happens to be with ratings. I've got three properties on the table. I have the NBA, I have the college football playoff, and I have Notre Dame football. How would you rank them in order of what a priority should be for a network in terms of bidding?
Oh, man. It's so hard to know, because I was just reading today and talking to some people who know things at Major League Baseball that there's a chance that the NFL might buy ABC. And because there's a concern about the broadcast rights and how there's cord cutting happening, and that's the NFL's cash cow right now. It comes down to what a network is really looking to achieve. The NBA has a very young demographic, and they have a lot of content, which is kind of the old model of sports media, right? It's how ESPN came to fruition, where they really were just trying to fill 2 hours at a time, but the satellite dish was so cheap, they gave it to them for 24, and they filled it with whatever they could. The most powerful of the three is very clearly college football playoffs. Nothing drives tribalism and drives viewership like football. And college football is second only to the NFL right now. And what's really interesting is there was a concern, and we talked about this years ago,
about how the next generation might not be attending football games or caring as much. Remember, we talked about how Michigan's attendance was down during the Rich Rod era and the like. And with NIL, the transfer portal, and just the way that these schools have leveraged social media and the power of brand, like, you know, Coach Prime is doing, that is completely flipped on its head. Mm-hmm. College football numbers are through the roof this year, especially when it comes to viewership and what people are watching. So it's really a question of how long a deal do these properties choose to strike? And as we've talked about, because if you strike a short-term deal and bet on yourself, you hope it doesn't backfire. So that sometimes leads to, you know, maybe we take the long-term deal and take the money. But if you do that, you could end up like the ACC with the ESPN, or end up like, you know, what the Pac-12 did with Fox.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten, you know, they bet on themselves. They gave themselves a short enough time span that, hey, if this grows exponentially, we're going to be able to double down on that. And that's what I'm most interested about with CFP in particular, and then the NBA behind it, because the NBA has changed a few times over the past few years.
That's right.
How much are they going to leverage, you know, the value of a dollar now versus we go back to the negotiating table in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years?
Well, and this we were talking, years ago, we were talking about size of facility. And Buffalo at one point, Orchard Park, was an 80,000-seat stadium. Their new stadium they're going to build is 65. This is a trend you and I talked about 10 years ago, that you'll see smaller stadiums. That way tickets are more in demand than before. But you're right. The ratings are up across the board for everybody. But I also find it interesting that the viewership on Amazon Prime is up too. What indicator is that?
You know, it's interesting that we still don't really know how to track ratings on Amazon Prime and online. We've got an idea of what we think is a viewership number, but this is what led you and I could spend 3 hours talking about the writer's strike and what actually ended up happening there. It's big news at our way. It comes down to this idea that cord cutting was going to wreck the broadcast networks, and that sports was the last thing that was going to hold it together. And it's proving to be true. Mm. Sports is actually getting more popular. As cords are getting cut, people are moving more towards sports. And so that's why you see Apple being really aggressive, and they're saying they might put $2 billion into their next deal, which $2 billion for Apple is pocket change.
Right? Exactly.
And it's not a surprise that Amazon and Apple and the others are getting into this, because it's really the last bastion of viewership is this live event that people are interested in. So, you know, and it's interesting you talk about the size of the stadium and how it's kind of gone both ways. You know, everybody has built smaller stadiums, but because of it, now they're saying, at least people that I know that are in charge, that the World Cup finals are going to be in Dallas, not in New York or Los Angeles,
right?
Because Dallas has a big enough stadium and they have a big enough security fence that they can put around it.
They can get over 90,000 in that building because they can move stands around in there that people don't realize.
Yeah. And so, because you would think, you know, globally, it's got to be New York or Los Angeles, right? You got a $5 billion stadium in Los Angeles, and then New York is New York. But it sounds like it's almost a sure thing it's going to be a Jerry World.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But good for Jerry, right?
No. Hey, no. Hey, look, it's his place. That's his money. Just like it's Robert Kraft's money at Gillette Stadium. It's not, Jerry Jones is not out there, to his credit, he probably took infrastructure money to make sure that, you know, he had four-lane roads going from Globe Life Park over to his place. But but that's his money that he put in there.
Oh, he just expanded his internal parking lot because he's got more grandkids. And fun fact, you know, I'm just bringing it up because I'm here and I've seen it. You know, Cotton Bowl has been a partner of ours for a very long time.
Right.
He actually has his own suite that you always see him on TV, but he actually has an elevator in that suite in the back that goes up to a bird's nest that's a private room just for him to get away from people to watch the game when it gets tight.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is built around Jerry. It's a toy store.
Oh, no. I did the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
And when we were there,
best broadcasting setup there is. You got the best seats there is for broadcasting.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Okay. Here's one of the like no big deal things to most people, but they actually have a bathroom in the back of the booth. Okay. So because Brad Sham and I were talking about it. Brad says, I know we're at the goal line, Steve, because we had the Cowboys booth. Yep. He says, and I talked to Jerry, and he said, Brad, I love you, but I need to sell that stuff at the 50-yard line.
Yep, that's what it's here for, and that's what we're talking about. Smaller stadium, more hospitality, more corporate dollars. I mean, what they're realizing on the team side, and we're going back to our media point, is that there's certain ways that you make dollars. You know, you have your ticket sales, you have your sponsorship sales, you have your hospitality sales. You don't need as many seats to do that, and then you have the revenue and the media rights. And that's the concern with the NFL, is that the media rights is such a massive part of the NFL.
Right.
And what Bob Iger's doing with selling off ESPN and having all of these different suitors coming in, including the NBA, it causes some concern, right? This is how you're making your money. So it's going to be so fascinating, because everything we've known to be the norm is not the norm anymore. We don't really know how many people are watching on the streaming services, mm-hmm. but we know the streaming services are more powerful with the demographic that's coming up, the 13 to 25-year-olds, which are the ones that are going to, you know, we're going to sell to advertisers over the next 5, 7 to 10 years. And that's the TV deals we're talking about, right? Right. It's always interesting, because when you're a listener and you hear it and you think, I don't really care about the term of a TV deal, but then you start to put into perspective that, well, that TV deal takes us in 5 years from now, and the person they're going to be selling to is currently a freshman in high school.
Right.
It matters, right? And it matters quite a bit.
And this is where...
Otherwise, you end up like the ACC.
This is where the 18 to 34 comes in. That's why if you are potentially skewing younger, so that's the NBA deal, and in some part that's the college football playoff deal.
Mm-hmm.
This is where MLS has done well, because they do well with the 18 to 34 market, and it's not talked about often enough.
No, they do fantastic with that market, and baseball's doing better with that market this year all of a sudden, which nobody saw coming.
Right.
I mean, 2 years ago was baseball is going to die. It's all old people that watch it. And now all of a sudden they made a bunch of changes. Attendance is up 9.8% this year across the board, which is egregious. And people that are younger are watching it. So MLS, there's a reason Apple did the MLS deal. There's a reason Apple backed Messi on this. They know what they're doing, right? And they know that, you know, eventually they're going to build this up and be, you know, look, it's the media capital of the world. It's a matter of time before we get to the point where the infrastructure over here is strong enough to support that league in the way it needs to be supported.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what they're doing when it comes to, you know, people coming up and playing the game. I mean, soccer participation is higher than any other sport, while football participation has dropped.
Right.
So there's conversations about all of it, but what's the most fascinating about what you said is how do you rank the three TV deals right now? Right now, CFP, then NBA.
Yep.
But 10 years from now, who knows?
Right, who knows? Exactly.
Doing all the right things.
See, that's what I want to see when the World Cup comes here. What does that then do to the pecking order that we're talking about now? Is the World Cup the fulcrum that launches soccer or whatever to a point where it becomes a must-have property in the country?
Right. It launched MLS the first time in 94. MLS came out of the 94 World Cup. But now it's an actual league, right? It's a real league with a lot of people paying attention. The Chicago Fire, Messi himself sold out Chicago Stadium with 60-something thousand fans.
Right.
Right. And they even said, we'll refund you if he doesn't play. He didn't play. But it's changing everything by bringing these international stars in. And then you can eventually build your national stars and go from there. But it's really fascinating to look at, because the amount of money that pours into sports, you know, you talk to people who are involved on the Commander sale, which there really wasn't another bid. So Jeff Bezos never really got involved in that. I know the bankers who were on that deal. So what's happening is they're saying, okay, well, the money has to eventually stop. But there's the problem, Steve, is there's too much money, because now the leagues are allowing private equity to get involved. They're allowing investment groups to buy teams. They keep waiting for this quote-unquote bubble to pop, and it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, we know with the Pac-12, and of course it all fell apart. And so now this story goes, and was it a professor from Stanford, something like that? He valued the league at $50 million per school. And you're like, okay.
You want me to drag Stanford? Because I'll do it right now. You mean the institution that turned down 75% of their perfect SAT scores because they're so good, and they have such a great graduate school of business, they just got outmaneuvered by literally every single school in the Big Ten and all the others that moved to the Big 12. Like, they... You're supposed to be the center of the business world where all these great minds come from,
mm-hmm.
and you got left behind.
Yeah. Because...
like, talk about a misstep. On the most public stage.
Yeah.
Like, how is that not embarrassing? You're writing case studies on how to run business? Now, I have nothing against Stanford. I'm an SC grad. I got into Stanford. I grew up near there.
Yep.
But I find that hilarious.
I did as well. But in reality, what did the Big Ten move do to really essentially save the future for USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington?
Yeah. You know, we talked a couple of years ago about the possibility of USC going
exactly
independent,
yep.
right?
Independent,
and
that's right.
That's growing more difficult. When you talk about Notre Dame football, right? That is an institution that, as much as they're a USC rival and they're playing each other this weekend, USC's not on that level when it comes to national exposure. They're not the mm-hmm. team of the Northeast. They don't have the history. They have a lot of history, but not as much as Notre Dame. They had to align with a super conference at some point, and all these super conferences are aligning with the college football playoff. We all know this, and it's becoming the Super League, which is what it should be and what it has to be. I think that USC and UCLA were going to find a strong home either way. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I think Oregon and Washington, who you pointed out, those are the ones that are the bigger concerns, right? You know, the public university that is UCLA has so much story depth with the basketball program. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But Oregon and Washington, you know, public schools really just came to prominence in Oregon in the last 25 years. UW was much more prominent in the 90s than they have been until now. They got Penix playing quarterback there, who I don't know how he's still playing quarterback. I feel like he was Indiana's quarterback 9 years ago.
Yeah. You have no idea how many Michael Penix Day games I've done. I've done plenty.
how old is he at this point? Every time he's on the TV, I think I watched him beat... Penn State
I think
in the 2020 COVID season.
Yeah, I think he's older than Zach Wilson. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. It's crazy. But it saved sports at those institutions. And here's what people don't understand. When I say it saved sports at those institutions, sports at Stanford and Cal are dead. Stanford mm-hmm. and Cal are now Olympic sports schools,
right.
which is great. I mean, that's what the origination of university sports was, and that's what they kind of want to be. They're going to be really good at track and swimming and, you know, those sorts of things. But mm-hmm. when it comes to revenue generation, basketball and football, they will be off the map in the next 5 years. They just will. They will be mm-hmm. as competitive at football as Vanderbilt is, and we won't hear about them in basketball.
Right.
Because it's very difficult to recruit on the West Coast, and now you're competing with four schools that are playing in the Big Ten,
right.
and your pitch is we're in the ACC from the Bay Area. This doesn't work.
Is it your sense, and this is something we won't know until they actually send them out, but the Big Ten, you know, and it's going to depend on who it is, but when Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State go out there, it's not that USC will sell out, because they will. And when Penn State goes out there next year, that's going to be a sellout.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Can they sell out UCLA?
Yes. But more importantly, it's not about selling out the building. It's about the ads,
okay.
right? I mean, you're limited at the Coliseum. Let's use the Coliseum as an example because they're a global brand that people know,
right?
Yep. You're limited in what you can sell, and you and I both know they're going to sell all of it.
Right.
Right? All exactly. of their suites, all of their tickets, unless mm-hmm. they get egregious on their pricing, they're going to sell that. There's no way they won't.
Right.
But you don't have a limitation on that now because you're selling. It's going to be the big noon kickoff, or it's going to be the night game. You are going to sell ads for it, and those ad dollars go through the roof. Those are the ad dollars that pay for the broadcast deals. That's where the money comes. So when you bring Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State out here to the West Coast, that's the biggest differentiator for the Big Ten. It's just the TV dollars. It's going to be through the roof.
And by the way, just so everybody knows, the Big Ten, which has 9 Friday night games, will expand to 9 Friday night games next year. Now, Penn State and USC are not going to be playing on a Friday night.
No.
Just
no.
so you know, they won't be.
No.
But that does tell you about the inventory.
Maryland and Rutgers will.
Yep. Welcome to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, exactly.
Great to
see
you.
Hey, Northwestern at UCLA. Enjoy that.
Friday. Welcome. Enjoy it. That's great.
Yeah.
It's your basic 4:30 start, 7:30 Eastern time. Great.
Yeah. They would put UCLA at Rutgers on a Wednesday night if they could.
Don't tempt them.
I know, right? Doesn't matter. Just go play. You don't have to go up against anybody else.
Okay, I'll leave it with this final question. You're out there. You're well connected. I'm not going to get into all the connections you have there because that's not, you know, that's our business because we know that. Have they talked to you about the pluses and the minuses to them of the Big Ten just from a competition point of view?
Oh, yeah. So more importantly, it's interesting. I looked at it and thought what everybody did originally. So Mike Bone is a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. I know he's not involved anymore, but he was very involved in the move that was done.
And he's still getting paid.
He's still getting paid. Andy Enfield is a friend of mine. Andy's kids play volleyball on the same club team that my kids play on. And I know a lot of Lincoln staff, so I know them very well. And all of our belief originally was this is just going to make it way harder to get to the playoff. Mm-hmm. And why are we doing this, right? The Pac-12 is a lot easier to walk through. But the recruiting impact has been significant because what I didn't realize, and this is what Mike and Lincoln's head of recruiting told me, was we're losing too many schools to the SEC or too many kids to the SEC and the Big Ten.
Right.
So even if we can walk through the Pac-12, we're not competitive anymore. The days of Mike Williams coming from Florida to play at SC are over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the whole purpose in all of this is, you know, look, we don't have, the Pac-12 never had the ability to have those highlight games. So USC had to play those games out of conference.
Right.
One thing USC is very proud of is they're one of only, I think maybe the only one or one of only two or three schools that has never played a Division I AA team.
Right.
Or FCS, whatever they call it now.
Yep.
They've only played top division teams.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to do that because nobody's excited about at Oregon State, you know, at Washington State, at Cal, at Stanford.
Right.
I mean, if you look at the teams that are considered middle tier in the Big Ten, their draw is significantly larger than the middle of the division out here. And that's been the biggest differential for them is recruiting. They said, watch the recruiting classes. They're going to be significantly stronger. And I kind of said, well, Lincoln was going to do that anyways. They said, no, just watch.
Yeah. And what's in the other part is the expansion to 12, and maybe we'll see to 16. You have more wiggle room to get into the playoff than you actually do now.
Once you get to 16, you'll have more. And look, I mean, these conferences are getting bigger. Big 12 is about to add Gonzaga. They're going to be the Big 17.
Yeah.
I'm certain that, you know, the Pac is looking at different options. I know San Diego State thing's not going to happen, and, you know, they're not going to be able to make that happen. But, look, we're headed the right direction, right? And this is the direction I've thought we should have been headed the whole time. I mean, you're around these kids. You see what it takes to be an athlete. I was an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I had all this. I could share stories of cheating all day long of mm-hmm. how they tried to help us with our homework and the like. But I played a non-revenue generating sport. Right. I played basketball. I played volleyball. Volleyball didn't generate revenue. I had to do my class. These kids, the amount of work they put into this, this is a job.
Yeah.
And it is a major. And they are learning how to live in the real world in something that can make the money as coaches, as trainers, and all of these other things. So I'm just happy to see it going the way it's going because I think it is the right thing for the student athlete. And great, let them make money and then everybody else will make more money too. And it's funny that NIL, we thought was going to poison the well, it's actually made it more interesting.
Yeah.
It's made it easier for sleeping giants to come back and it's created significant gains when it comes to viewership. It's all the opposite of what a lot of the purists thought.
See, this is what dinner is going to be like. All right.
Yeah.
Except there's going to be hours of this.
I can't wait.
Tell everybody at the Star we said hi, including the Eagles fans who listen to the show. So.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a Niner fan, so I let them know about it all day today.
Perfect. Tony.
Right.
My brother, thanks so much. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you. Go Birds. We'll talk soon.
The great Tony Knopp. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend now. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.